Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a look at some of the new laws now in effect in Texas and some of the significant ones that didn't make it. And gearing up for the Ken Paxton Senate impeachment trial, will Texas voters watch and care? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. September 1st is the day that most of the laws passed in the previous Texas regular legislative session go into effect. That is, if they're not blocked by the courts for violating the Constitution. And that applies to the drag show ban, the Death Star bill that ends home rule for Texas cities, the online porn ID law, and a book rating slash banning law. But with almost 800 bills passed and becoming law, there are many that will have a direct impact on the lives of Texans, including SB 379, which ends the so-called tampon tax. This is a sales tax on many family care products. The average sales tax rate in Texas is 8.2%. State Representative Donna Howard, an Austin Democrat, had fought for this bill session after session, kept seeing it coming up short. But this time it passed, and it was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott.
Well, first off, I'll say it's about damn time. And this has been something that's been going on, obviously, for years. It's a discriminatory tax that impacts half the population for a large part of their lives for medical necessity. I'm hoping we're going to be working toward actually providing these products to those that can't afford them right now. But certainly to not have a discriminatory sales tax on top of everything else is a step in the right direction. And over a period of time, for those that are living paycheck to paycheck, this cumulatively adds up to give them some extra money that they can use for other necessities in life. So I'm thrilled that Speaker Phelan made this a high priority. I'm thrilled that we finally got it through.
This also applies for diapers, adult mm-hmm. diapers and infant diapers. That's important.
Yes. Absolutely. I also had legislation these previous years for diapers as well. It all got included together in one package this time with other items like breast pumps, nursing supplies, maternity clothes, bottles. All of these things are essentials for daily living for many people. And all of these things can add up over a period of time. So this provides some welcome relief, I think, for Texas families across the lifespan, from menstrual periods to having babies to, unfortunately, sometimes having to use these products when you're elderly. So I'm really thrilled that we're looking at what can we do to keep some extra money in Texans' pockets for these absolutely daily essential products.
Well, as you said, you've been fighting for this for many, many sessions. Finally, yes. You got this over the line, got it past the veto problem that we have in Texas. What made the difference this year?
I think a lot of things. One is that in a post-Roe world, with the severe restrictions on abortion legislation that was passed by the legislature in the previous session, and a lot of concern among those across the political spectrum, especially women, about losing autonomy over their own healthcare decisions, that there was an effort to show that we do indeed at the legislature support women and families. And this was one of the ways to show that. I think the other thing that worked in our favor this time was a significant budget surplus. There was no excuse here to say that we couldn't afford to lose the revenue on the sales tax of these products. It's quite frankly a very, very minimal amount compared to the rest of the budget. So I think that being in the financial situation we were in and wanting to demonstrate support for women and families, that those were things that really made this happen.
So there's no ceremony or any ceremonial buying of a box of one thing or another tonight at midnight?
idea, actually, David, but not that I know of.
Donna Howard is a Democrat and a state representative from Austin. Another of the new laws that takes effect is one that addresses school safety concerns after last year's shooting at Uvalde's Robb Elementary. House Bill 3 requires all public schools in the state to have an armed officer on campus during school hours and meet other new safety guidelines. But HB 3 has received mixed responses from parents. Houston Public Media's Rebecca Knoll reports that some school districts are struggling to comply with this new law.
Post-COVID, staffing any position at public schools has been hard. As of a few weeks ago, Fort Bend ISD, southwest of Houston, still had unfilled positions, including for security officers, at 20% of its campuses. That's even true in districts with their own law enforcement. Steve Bassett is Fort Bend ISD's deputy superintendent.
All school districts that do have police departments, and not all do, but all school districts that have police departments, for the most part, my understanding, have struggled to fill spots.
It's a problem statewide. Houston ISD and Katy ISD are both seeking good cause exceptions from the law, since not all positions could be filled by September 1st. Bassett says another big issue is funding.
There has been some funding that's come with these mandates, but it's not nearly enough.
Fort Bend is one of Texas's largest school districts, with just under 80,000 students. In HB 3, the state allocated $15,000 per campus, meaning Fort Bend ISD will get around $1.5 million. Bassett says they'll need a million more.
When you're talking about security guards, for us to have a security guard to fill all of the spots that we have at elementary schools, that's going to cost over, $2.5 million.
To fill the gap, Fort Bend ISD either needs to deficit spend or ask voters to approve a slight property tax increase. I met with parent Lakshmi Ramakrishnan at a cafe in Sugar Land. She has two middle schoolers in the district and says she wishes Texas lawmakers had focused on addressing other needs for public schools.
I'm not a huge fan of the resources that would go towards armed guards on every campus, given that the legislature pretty much failed to send money down to the school districts to pay for things like bus drivers or teachers.
Ramakrishnan says it's ironic, given the state lawmakers' focus on property tax relief in this year's legislative session.
You can say we're going to give you this tax relief, but my district is going to have to come back and ask me to pay more. They're going to be coming back in November and asking us to pay more. I just feel like it's a waste, honestly. It was a wasted opportunity in this legislature to address the most pressing need.
Of course, there are parents who support having armed guards in schools. But beyond hiring and cost, there's also concern guards may not help make schools safer. There's no clear data showing armed security officers in schools deter or prevent gun violence. Meanwhile, there is data showing students of color and special needs students are more likely than their peers to be arrested or disciplined by school law enforcement.
Anytime you're increasing security staff, and in this case, requiring them to carry a firearm, what you're also doing is increasing the risk to students who require some kind of behavioral intervention. And that scares me.
That's Celeste Barreto, a parent of three students of color in Houston ISD, including one with special needs. She's also an educator herself. Barreto worries House Bill 3 could put her kids at greater risk, especially her son with behavioral challenges.
I don't feel like he's safer with personnel on campus who are armed.
Beyond fear, Barreto says she's angry.
When I think about what our community is saying and what our community is asking for, and then feeling like our legislature is not giving us what we asked for, but instead giving us something else that is just clearly bad policy, that's an outrage.
Beyond requiring officers, HB 3 creates new security protocols, including requiring an emergency operations plan at every campus. I'm Rebecca Noel in Houston.
It's only natural that we inform you about the new laws that Texans now have to live under. But what about those big bills that made a lot of noise during the session but didn't become law? Let's take a look.
This bill, I think, would be a pivotal bill.
Last May, Andre Harris testified before the Texas Senate Health and Human Services Committee about HB 181, a bill that directly impacts his life and so many others.
I didn't mention I also live with sickle cell disease.
A genetic disease that affects red blood cells. A vast majority of people who have it are black. It's estimated that Texas has the third largest population of people with sickle cell, but that's a crude estimate because Texas does not have a sickle cell registry. Harris was testifying, hoping to change that.
In 1989, when I was born, my family was told that I would not live this long.
Harris beat those long odds, but says a Texas sickle cell registry would help others also living with the disease.
And so we do need bills like this and more bills to make sure that we hold the medical system and government accountable for how sickle cell patients are treated.
The bill easily passed, but ran into a problem with Governor Greg Abbott. It was one of 70 bills that he vetoed. In his veto statement, Abbott said the sickle cell registry would violate the privacy of people with sickle cell. Representative Jarvis Johnson carried the bill and rejects Abbott's reasoning for the veto.
This disease has crippled a population and they've been underserved. And so there was no rhyme or reason because we have multiple registries already. And those registries are just simply put in place to ensure that we understand what, you know, how people are affected.
Johnson said if the Texas legislature had a functioning veto override, which is in the state constitution, then Abbott's veto would not stand.
And so we'll just have to go back to the drawing board next session.
Cheers erupted after a House committee approved one of the session's most followed bills to raise the age to buy an assault rifle from 18 to 21. This bill was a direct reaction to the school shooting in Uvalde that killed 19 students and two teachers. The families of the victims, including Brett Cross, spoke out on the Capitol steps during the session trying to pass that new law.
So fight with us and help us demand change because you don't want to be fighting from this side with the hole in your heart that cannot go away.
However, the Raise the Age bill didn't get a vote on the House floor. And despite being supported by 75% of Texans, it never became law. Today, Cross says he's infuriated.
It would have gone into effect September 1st. And now, you know, until we're able to fight again for it, there will be another mass shooting with an AR with somebody under the age of 21.
Cross and other Uvalde families say they will keep fighting for gun safety laws that they say will better serve Texans, but that's going to have to wait for the next legislative session. On Tuesday, the impeachment trial for suspended Attorney General Ken Paxton gets underway. And new polling from the Texas Politics Project at UT Austin shows nearly half of all Texans agree that Paxton's actions justify removing him from office. Jim Henson directs the project.
Only 18% said that he had not done something that justified removing him. But I think tellingly, a big chunk, 35%, didn't offer an opinion. So while the public is not the direct jury on this, there's a lot of negative sentiment, but a big share of the jury is still out.
The poll also shows a possible split among Paxton's Republican base.
Democratic attitudes were lopsided. 71% said yes, only 8% said no. It wasn't justified. Only about a quarter of Republicans, 24%, said he should be removed. But 43% of Republicans said that they didn't know, and only about a third said that he should not be removed.
Opinions about Paxton and his future in Texas politics will likely change as the impeachment trial gets underway, testimony is heard, and more people learn about the hard evidence behind the charges. Joe Jaworski is a third-generation Texas trial lawyer, the former Galveston, Texas mayor, and he was recently a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Texas Attorney General. Jaworski warns that if Paxton isn't convicted by the state Senate, it will be destructive for state politics.
David, it's historical what's about to happen, and everybody needs to pay attention to Ken Paxton's Senate impeachment trial, because it's going to have great effect on Texas politics and, I believe, national politics. Specifically, what's going to happen to Ken Paxton is, in my opinion, will be a test as to see how much corruption in Texas politics our elected leaders are willing to suffer. By that, I mean the evidence is squarely put before the jurors or the Texas senators. And I don't think there's an explanation for it. It's you know, radical in its quantity and its quality. Mr. Paxton has been in office one way or the other for 20 years, and I don't know that he had much of a distinguished legal career beforehand. So his wealth has been accumulated while he's been in office, and Ken Paxton is going to fight to keep it figuratively to the political death. And the question is, are Texas senators of both parties going to enable him to stay in office because that's how we do business in Texas? Or are they going to take a principled stand and say, this level of self-service rather than public service is damaging to the great state of Texas? That's why this is historical.
So Ken Paxton is accused of abuse of his office, of obstruction of justice, and of taking bribes from this Nate Paul Austin developer. And when you express that, it sounds pretty mild in comparison to what the evidence apparently looks like. It seems to be more than that. And so I'm really trying to figure out how to help the everyday Texan who doesn't follow the news every day get an idea of what Ken Paxton has been up to and why his fellow Republicans are willing to hold him accountable.
Right. I think it is a combination of arrogance and a combination of that with literally the multiple acts of corruption that are mounting up. And by that, you know, the way to report this, I think, is what happens when the public office of attorney general is turned over for the benefit of a private individual in exchange for, you know, gifts and services. A phrase that is in the evidence that the House Board of Managers attorneys has adopted is Ken Paxton turned the Texas Office of Attorney General into a concierge law firm for one individual, Nate Paul. And it seems strange, you know, why Nate Paul when there's so many other people who give Ken Paxton money. But for some reason, Ken Paxton apparently fixated on this gentleman, Nate Paul. And from my research, it's clear that Nate Paul's first interaction with Paxton was at a time when they needed each other. This would have been October 2018. Ken Paxton was in the final weeks of a hotly contested general election for re-election, and he needed campaign money. And Nate Paul apparently needed to further his position in a lawsuit against a private foundation. And he probably thought it was a good idea to give some money to the attorney general because, as we all know, the attorney general's office has jurisdiction over charitable trusts and foundations. That's how it started. What it blossomed into, nobody could have ever predicted. You know, burner phones, fake Uber accounts, paying for home remodeling, hiring the mistress. It is, in a word, sordid.
Ken Paxton first came into statewide office using the Tea Party and evangelical votes to do that. And they apparently have still stuck with him as their guy. We're seeing defense of Ken Paxton from these quarters still. Why do you think that they haven't moved on?
You know, I think the Republican Party is splintering in that respect. But you said Tea Party, and I did particularly identify that. There are voters who truly believe in the culture war, David, and they believe Democrats are evil and Joe Biden is evil and anything that comes out of Washington, D.C. is evil. Then there are the rest of us who remember collaborative government, where Republicans and Democrats work together to compromise and actually advance American history. And, you know, there's decades and hundreds of years of experience. And we all know that should continue. But there are some people who are so far gone on the culture war that they identify Ken Paxton, irregardless of his conduct, as their warrior. The same sort of people that support Donald Trump no matter what he does.
Right. So the question has been, Ken Paxton being exposed for his, at very least, improper use of his office, does that have any, will there be any like splash damage to the Republican Party as a whole in Texas?
I think so. First off, Democrats have, as you would expect, complained about Ken Paxton politically, certainly, but his conduct, most certainly, for years now. Even some Republicans who had political designs on his office, Eva Guzman, George P. Bush, they complained too. But you might say they had a personal interest because they wanted political advancement themselves. But now the Republican Party, who has apparently blown the whistle in the lower chamber, has now splintered into two sides, if you will, the Defend Texas Liberty PAC and everyone else in the Republican Party. Now it is so robust, this internecine conflict, that you're seeing paid polling being done for each senator or each juror who is a Republican, showing that if they vote to convict Ken Paxton, voters will not approve of that. Now, these are push polls, David, but, you know, eliminating any argument Ken Paxton's lawyers might have that this is a criminal trial, we need to treat it like a real criminal trial, we can see that it's truly not, because Ken Paxton's ally, Defend Texas Liberty, is now publicly intimidating each Republican juror with a push poll to show you better vote to acquit or you're next. So I would say that that sort of outrageous intimidation, call it a threat, is not going to help the Republican Party work as one. They're splitting into two, and voters need to know that.
Being the Attorney General of Texas is a big job. There's a lot of different things that you're in charge of. You know, you are the lawyer for Texas, and you run a lot of prosecutions, and there's a lot going on. And I don't know if you've heard this, but word has been out for a long time that the office is not being run well. Have you picked up on any of that?
I absolutely have. And you're correct. The Texas Attorney General's office has so many key functions: collection of child support, managing the Public Information Act, open records, managing charitable trusts, municipal bonds, and of course, litigation for the entire state.
And prosecution of certain wrongdoers, particularly when it comes to pedophiles.
Absolutely. And human trafficking. And, you know, anytime a district attorney requests assistance from the Texas Attorney General's office, there is literally a criminal prosecution unit within the Office of Attorney General. And yet, here we have Ken Paxton using his political capital entirely to create a federal national profile that he, you know, sues Biden, he sues Obama, he helps Trump, turning his office into a culture war war room. And what I have seen since Ken Paxton's made that choice is morale at the Office of Attorney General is at an all-time low. And it's not just career employees. We're talking about political appointments that Paxton himself made have turned the boss into the Federal Bureau of Investigation for corrupt activities. And then the line attorneys and employees are completely demoralized and people are leaving. And, you know, David, it's hard to quantify the cost to the average Texan, but we all know as a human reality that low morale leads to loss of productivity. And so what could be a great office of attorney general, as we've had under previous generals, has been lost forever thanks to Ken Paxton. And honestly, that's why he needs to be impeached, not as a punishment to Ken Paxton, because I think a grand jury's decision awaits him. But this is to cleanse the institution that we all deserve, which is a effective office of attorney general.
So if the allegations are true against Ken Paxton, then he ought to be impeached, but also should he be disbarred? And also, should he be criminally prosecuted? Let's go with disbarred first.
Well, you know, absolutely. And you're, let me use this terminology. He is impeached. Yes. We'll find out soon that he'll be convicted and removed from office. There will be a separate vote after his conviction in the Senate on whether he should be barred from ever holding a statewide office of public trust again. Meantime, you're right. He has a disciplinary proceeding that he is having to defend where the state bar is actively seeking to disbar him, to ask the Texas Supreme Court to yank his license. And then there is a federal grand jury impaneled by the Department of Justice examining the exact same conduct that the Texas Senate is going to examine next week for criminal exposure. So he's got a full plate.
Do Texans want to have that happening with their attorney general?
Absolutely not. I think about some of the great attorney generals we've had, going back to, you know, General John Hill, Jim Maddox, and, you know, even Greg Abbott had his star turn as attorney general. I can't for the life of me believe that Governor Abbott supports this kind of wretched conduct. And I know that whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or something else, you cannot support this kind of corruption in any state office, much less the critical office of attorney general.
If Paxton is acquitted, if there aren't enough senators who are going to vote to convict him and remove him permanently from office, he goes back to being the full-time 100% Texas attorney general. What then?
Absolutely. He'll leave the Texas Senate chambers, high-five a few people, and go right back to his office. And he will redefine the word retribution as it presently exists in the dictionary, something that would make J. Edgar Hoover blush, probably.
Who would be the target of that retribution?
Well, he wouldn't do it alone. Defend Texas Liberty PAC, and Mr. Paxton would target the 60 Republicans in the Texas House who voted to impeach him. They would continue their culture war in Texas, more powerful than ever. Any senator that would vote to convict him, and there is going to be a record vote where the senator has to say his or her vote. So we'll know on each of the remaining 16 articles, David, how each of the 30 remaining senators, because we know Angela Paxton is out and will recuse.
Right, his wife.
But correct, his wife, Senator Angela Paxton, cannot vote, but all the others will have to. And so his retribution will extend to anyone who votes to convict him.
Joe Jaworski is a third-generation Texas trial lawyer, former Galveston mayor, and he was recently a candidate for the Texas nomination for attorney general. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. And there are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you get great podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.